twice a month on Fridays here on the Big Talker FM, we highlight the construction industry across our region through what we have coined as our Construction Connection segment with our friends at the Wilmington Cape Fear Home Builders Association. Cameron Moore is the executive officer of our local home builders group. He is with us once again here this morning as we've been talking lately about workforce development in our region. And in fact, the last couple of segments we had with the home builders brought in a number of guests, including the folks from the Southeast Area Technical High School and the efforts they're making to provide a broad view to our young people as far as different sorts of career paths they can take rather than getting stuck with well, a nice big old loan they need to pay back. Yeah, a college degree, but what you're going to do with it after you graduate from school? Well, in many instances, yeah, let's just go back to school. Let's get a master's. And then, oh, we've got $80,000 in debt, no job, and where are we going to go from here? Maybe we'll just request that you forgive our loans. Nonetheless, we won't get into that with Cameron too much here this morning. He's like, all right, dude, just get me on the air. I don't want to deal with all of your other chatter of the day. So without further ado, our friend Cameron Moore with the Wilmington Cape Fear Home Builders Association. He's with us here this morning. Cameron, it's a pleasure, my friend.
Good morning, Joe. I'm not debt-free, but I don't have student debt. I can promise you that.
Well, not yet, because you've got two high school age kids that you may be signing off on soon.
Sooner than I know. So, no, good morning. Appreciate you having us on, and we're excited about this morning's show. I've got three people here, obviously, in the studio with me. We've got Jimmy Pierce with Kids Making It, and we've got Dave Sabatrino and Kyle Henry with PBC Design and Build. And it's really, it's another kind of show about workforce development, because it's important to our industry in the sense that, I mean, looking at some of the estimates that we're seeing overall, 4 million people basically are involved in the construction overall as far as residential construction, nationally speaking. And when we look at the trades, we've talked about it, 26 people basically have to come in, 26 trades have to come in to touch a job site to get it from start to finish. And then that's just a CO. And then the other side of the coin, as far as the mortgage side, the title insurance side. But, you know, we have a problem. We've talked about it on this show for the last year and a half. We have an aging workforce. We've looked at the average of our aging workforce. We're from about 42 to 45 years old as far as the average age of a tradesman in our basically in our overall, you know, out of all those 26 trades. And that's a challenge for us in the sense of what's going to happen when that age group moves into the next 10 to 15 years. And then, of course, we look behind us and say, who is the next? Where's our next labor force coming from? But today's show is really talking about a little bit different. We've talked about the career pathway. We've talked about some of the ways that students can get involved and work their way through. You know, we've talked about, as far as the Home Builders Association, touching students down at the elementary, middle school level. Kind of lost a little bit of our market last year with COVID. Hopefully, as schools get back in, looks like next week, they'll start to get back in. We'll be able to get back into the school systems to put, well, quite frankly, these guys right here in the studio with me today, back in front of these students to tell them really what they do. But I wanted to touch on Kids Making It and turn a little bit over to Jimmy and real quick talk about, what is Kids Making It? Everyone says KMI, but what is Kids Making It? How did it start?
Well, Kids Making It started as the Kids Making It Woodworking Program, and that's still sort of what we're known by. It started actually when I found out back in the late 80s that my wife and I were going to have a baby. And it just really rocked my world, and I started thinking about what I was doing for a living. And I loved woodworking, was building our own furniture and doing things like that, and I just thought, you know, if I could do anything, it would be teaching woodworking to kids. So I just started that as a volunteer back in the early 90s. And anyway, it's evolved a lot over the years. Now we've been full-time since 2000. We've developed into a program serving probably 500 to 700 kids a year, generally. Most in early classes, introductory woodworking classes, like you're talking about, Cameron. Kids in the middle schools, the elementary schools, we go out, we do classes, we have kids come into our shop and do classes, and they get to build a project, and they get to keep it, and we tell them, you know, this is what it's all about.
With their hands.
And they're sawing wood, they're hammering nails, they're putting in screws with, screw guns and stuff. And then when they turn 13, we let them come in and be part of our after-school program, which is kind of an entrepreneurial thing. Kids get to make anything they want. They learn to use all the power tools. They get to sell in our retail shop. And every month, we sign checks for kids. And they range from a few dollars to, frankly, back at the holidays when kids were making these little Charlie Brown Christmas trees. Right. I had three kids make almost $1,000 in 3 weeks making those Charlie Brown Christmas trees. And it's a safe place to be off the streets. In the afternoons, they make friends, they learn woodworking, they learn to work with their hands. And then they really have the same bug that I got when I was a kid. And you know, Kyle and Dave, and you know all about it. It's just there's a joy of working with your hands that you can't get any other way.
And Jimmy, to touch on that real quick, you were a lawyer.
Yeah, that's what
you
I was doing.
You were a lawyer and went from basically being a lawyer to essentially what you just said is that, right. You know, I have a different passion.
Right, and it's you know, certainly been a labor of love, but I'll tell you, we have come to where we are now and with our programs and the kids we serve through the help. It's gone way beyond me and one kid in my backyard shop in 1994, which is where I started. And it's because of people like Dave and Kyle, right, who step up and say, we want to be part of the solution here, you know?
Right.
So we have an apprenticeship program where we hire kids after they get out of high school, if they don't have a job and aren't going to college, to do custom woodwork, and then we do jobs for the public. One of the first ones we did was when Kyle called me back in, a long time ago, when you all were sponsoring a 5K over across the river. You remember that, Kyle? And we made some little awards out of 2x4s that looked like a footprint. Was that right?
Yeah, you're right.
And so that's, you know, paid positions for kids who are out of school.
Sure.
Then we have a summer jobs program that we put on with Voyage and put kids in jobs. Every summer we have a KMI crew, and typically we do a construction project to help another nonprofit. We've worked at both the domestic violence shelters here and across the river to build storage sheds and playgrounds and things for those kids. But then where it really came full circle was about 4 years ago, maybe. Is that right, Cal? We were approached by a group in Wilmington, One Wilmington, which is a group of families that every year gets together and writes individual checks, pulls their money, finds a nonprofit that they think is doing some good work and offers it to them for something that's going to help them build capacity, not just to pay your salaries or pay your rent. And when they called us and said they want to do that, Andy Crowther and I, he's our program director, sat down and talked about it. And Andy grew up like Kyle, you know, like my daddy, you know, building houses, doing renovations, hands-on construction. And he said the missing piece is we need to offer kids a real pathway into the construction workforce. And so let's build that. Let's build a building, and let's start a program teaching the skill trades. And so that's what we decided. We started raising money. And we got to where we kind of had it about ready to go. We needed to find a builder, and we needed to get some bids. And Kyle called me, I think, and he said, well, we got a bid for you. We ain't going to charge you anything.
Right.
We're going to do it. We're not going to take any profit. We're not going to charge any markup, any overhead, none of our time. We're just going to put together good subs, get the best prices we can, and build it for you. So if you can beat that, do it. we ain't gonna try, you know. We're so excited. Now, right. I'll tell you, they did, and if you've seen our building, it's stunning.
Let's jump to that point. So, Kyle, why? Why do it for free? Why come in? Why? What's the impact of that? And just, quite frankly, the big question, why?
I think we had a relationship with KMI, and we had watched what was going on, and it was really neat. But Jimmy had that need when a child turns 13. What's next? And in our industry, we are very shorthanded. We know that we need laborers coming in. We have people retiring, and we don't have – construction industry hasn't done a great job of attracting new people to come in. And so we knew that Jimmy was trying to bridge that gap between 13 and an adult at 18 when we can use them on our job sites. And we thought that that was very important. So if we can help him bridge the gap between 13 and 18, at least to keep these kids involved in the program, that helps us, because we know once that person has engaged at that level of commitment from the age of 13 to 18, then we know, you know what, that's probably somebody we would like to have in our industry.
Right.
And so that was really it. And building a building was the tool that he needed to do it. Luckily, we know how to do that. And we just, we built a building, ended up being much more than we ever imagined on day one, when we sat down with a napkin and kind of drew out, the first iteration of this whole building was just an Excel spreadsheet, you know, right, right. This is how much money you have and this is what it's going to look like. And, we went from there. So we really wanted to help him bridge that gap between the age of 13 and adulthood.
Sure. You know, Kyle, we've had some conversations and actually Dave has mentioned this to me before. We've talked about essentially, and I've come into your shop quite a few times. There, we've had a lot of different things. We actually had our board of directors meeting there a couple years ago. I've come in and bought Christmas presents, right. Birthday presents.
Right.
and every time I come in there, I see kids essentially working with their hands, which is great, because I think that's the lost art in our industry. You know, a carpenter, just a general carpenter, can make a very, very good living and, quite frankly, are very, very hard to find. And so, you know, we talk a little bit about working with your hands. Dave has mentioned something to me. We're still one of the only, jobs, industries to where hands still have to be involved to get the job site from start to finish. We don't have robots on our job sites just yet. So, we'll get there, I guess, one day, but we're not there yet. So I think that's interesting because, you know, Kyle, we've had conversations and you mentioned when we get kind of to that 13, 14, 15, if we haven't touched them as an industry, we've lost them in some respects.
Yeah, I think at one point I had read an article that said, you know, basically by middle school, the child or their family have already decided what they're going to be doing.
Correct.
So if your parent was in the military, you may be going that route if you're, you know. And so, yeah, we know that that's a very impressionable age. We've spent some time going into the schools and middle schools and kind of presenting our case out there, bringing computers, showing the kids that there's a lot of technology involved now, 3D modeling, stuff like that, just things that the general student wouldn't necessarily think of for construction. But if we can try to grab their attention at that age, then we feel like we've got a better chance in the end of them ending up there, because now they're not thinking of the plumber that comes in dropping tools all over the house trying to fix something. They're thinking, man, I could sit behind a desk and be an estimator.
Right.
And that's not a bad job. Or I could build 3D models. That's pretty cool. I already know how to do that.
Right. No, it's a good point.
Cameron, let me ask you. I know this has been a topic of conversation in these discussions on trying to appeal to these young people, you know, at that impressionable age. But ultimately, they're going to have to twist the arm of mom and dad, because mom and dad have a view as to where they want their kid to go. And, you know, their neighbor is going to UNC Chapel Hill and going to study this. And your kid may be real good with a screw gun and a hammer, but I want my kid to go to NC State to become this, that, or the other. How do we, you know, open the eyes of the adults in the room to showcase the fact that, you know, this is a great pathway for a kid if they have, you know, some natural instincts and abilities, and also, you know, maybe a will to learn, you know, this facet? I mean, you could be in high school, as you said, through a summer job or your college jobs, working as an apprentice, making some pretty good money, and you could decide that maybe it's not for me, but you have a whole boatload of experience that's going to help you save probably a ton of money down the road when you do own a house and have a family and something breaks. You know how to go to the, you know, home improvement store and fix it yourself. I mean, you know, this is a trade and an opportunity here for young people just to branch out a little bit further, to extend that umbrella. I think the question is, how do we get the adults to see that vision as well?
We've got to kind of back the whole narrative up about probably 10 years, essentially, is what we have to do. Every one of us in this room went through home ec or shop or drafting, or some other kind of class that had woodworking inside of it. I know I did. I can see everybody shaking their head generally, yes. Those classes themselves, unfortunately, they still exist, but at a lesser extent. And what's ended up also happening, as teachers age out and retire, we're seeing a challenge with the school system coming back and saying that is a worthwhile cause, let's keep it. Then we move to kind of, you know, up about 5 years, CTE, the STEM program. There's absolutely nothing wrong with those programs. Kyle just actually touched on CTE and the STEM programs by 3D modeling, all of that. That's all science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with college as well. The challenge is, though, is what's happened is the narrative has switched so much to college, 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 college. And a lot of kids maybe aren't ready. They get into college. They burn up about 1 or 2 years until they kind of figure out what they want to do, if they ever can reach that point. The interesting thing about our episode last time with CTEC was that it is a vocational high school. One of the first, if I know of, in that capacity, in North Carolina. I know there's some other ones in North Carolina, but it is a true vocational high school in the sense that you pick an academy and you work through that. You get the same education you get. You take the same classes that my two kids take at the high school level. If you want to play sports, you can go play sports on those teams. But the narrative has to change in the sense, and Kyle hit the nail on the head, is that we've got to do a better job as an industry, and we have to have the school system meet us also halfway to get back into the school systems to share what Jimmy's doing, how he can shape and basically mold kids and get back to the extent of you can make a very good living. We talked about some of the national numbers average-wise, but you can make a very good living if you're willing to put the time and the energy in. And it's hard work. It's not easy. But you can be your own boss at some point, and you can make a very good living. But the narrative has to change.
And I'm sorry, if I could just jump in quick, I'll tell you, in an ideal world, we would have shop back in the schools, in every school. Anyway, as well as all the tech and all that stuff. I'll say this. I heard about an electrician recently who works by himself, mm-hmm. only does service calls. I heard this last year, that he made $325,000 the previous year just doing service calls by himself. Mm-hmm. That's a good living.
And probably turns down jobs because he's to that point.
I'm sure he does. And the other thing that you cannot buy, and I don't care how much you have in student loans or what degree you get, the other thing you cannot buy is the satisfaction you get from riding by a house that you've helped build.
Very true point.
Or, you know what I'm talking about? I mean, I'm looking at Kyle nodding his head. It is like, you know, you can't replace that.
That's a very good point.
At the end of the day, when you walk off that job site, you've been part of a team. You've helped build this thing. You stand back. You say, damn it, I did that.
Right.
And I think the original question was, how do we attract the adults in the room to do that? I think one of the answers the answer is there's 12 answers probably. Right. But one of them is that I've always been a fan of is, you know, when I went to shop class, we were kind of the rough crowd in the school. I always tell my kids that the school was just trying to figure out a way to get me to graduate. You know, that was it. What classes can we offer him? Cooking and shop and art and photography and all of those fed into my senior year to give me credits. But one of the things that I think we could do is offer shop instead of just being a class. Offer it on an AP level. So when you get to the shop 3 and 4, how about giving the kids some AP credits that will help them in college? Because I know that my children are kind of, they're advanced and they would like to take shop, but they don't want to miss out on the opportunity to maybe get a college credit for taking a high school class.
Right, right.
And I think if you start making the industry attractive from the very bottom, then you can build on that as you go.
And that's a good point. That's kind of how the CTEC program aligns with just that. You're basically dual enrolled, and so you're getting that college credit. I mean, essentially, you'll come out of CTEC at graduation with an associate's degree. Already, you've taken probably about almost one and a half to 2 years of college already. So that's a great point, because that's the incentive.
And that's built in with CTEC, the mm-hmm. tuition-free Cape Fear Community College partnership that they've developed.
Yeah. I mean, that's the luxury of that program. So
it's a great nonprofit organization. kidsmakingit.org is their website. As you just heard, it's a youth woodworking program that helps teach the valuable vocational, entrepreneurial, and life skills for kids all across our area. Their building is located on Castle Street. You can find out more about what they do and why they do it at kidsmakingit.org. That's kidsmakingit.org. Cameron, as we move forward with this discussion, you know, how as you get out, you know, we obviously have the guys from PBC here and other builders. I mean, guys are busy right now. We live in the fastest growing area of the country. For these guys to take a few extra minutes out of their day or their week, that's valuable time to them. Time equals money. How has the rest of the building community kind of, you know, embraced this idea that you're kind of spearheading?
It's a challenge. You know, we certainly have members that I think have heard me for the last probably 3 years talk about this until I'm blue in the face and understand the need. I think where we'd really need more support is looking at the trades, because at the end of the day, they're really truly the ones that are going to feel the effect. And I've actually already been feeling the effects of it. I get calls every week, if not every 2 weeks, with, hey, do you know anybody over at Cape Fear that's coming out of the HVAC program, the electrical program? And what I tell them is like, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to get in line with the next 25 calls that have called me. And it's a, you know, that I hate to tell a member that, but that's essentially where we're sitting at. The great thing about Cape Fear Community College, I use a construction management program, all the kids once graduating have a job and have multiple offers as a job. I mean, kind of pick of the litter, so to speak, which is great because it shows the worth and the value of what they've put into that program. But it also goes back to our industry and shows the need. I've said before, our industry, I've told when Dave was on our board, he heard me say it a couple times, we're going to wage war on this problem, but we're never going to actually win the problem, so to speak. We're never going to win the war. But I look at it as far as incremental small steps and what we can do. And so we're going to be a part of it. And do our part as far as to get our members involved.
I think our industry needs to also put their money where their mouth is. And that's, you know, we just have to pay a living wage. I think for years we've gotten away without doing that. And you see ads on my computer that, you know, you can get $15 an hour starting out at McDonald's. You can get $25 an hour starting out at Coca-Cola. And I talk to people in the industry, and they're willing to pay a starting salary of $10 an hour. Well, $10 an hour is kind of what you're making in high school right now. You know, so I don't believe that the salaries have escalated along with inflation and everything else. So we're not necessarily – it's pretty hard to attract someone that has a good work ethic, is a diligent person, takes pride in what they do, and pay them $10 an hour. So, you know, I have an experiment going on right now with a guy that I've brought on staff and doesn't have a driver's license right now. He's kind of in a rough spot. And the first thing I said is, look, I don't know what you're making. I'll pay you more. Come with us. Let's try to figure this out. You know, and hopefully that means something to him and he'll reciprocate that and he'll stay in the industry. But it's going to take more people that are willing to just step up and pay a little bit more, but you're going to get more out of it, I believe.
And I think, you know, from your industry and all others within the workforce, you know, when an employer takes, you know, pride and, you know, gives that understanding to the employee that they have their back and they support them and, you know, they're going to help them through whatever as part of, you know, your family ultimately, that your employee is going to give back, you know, 99 times, you know, out of 100, that they're going to do the right thing, you know, and there are going to be, you know, rough patches up and down, bad apples and all that. But I think a lot of people out there think that they're, you know, employers are just that, they're their boss rather than somebody that's going to have their back when it comes into a time of need, whether that be personally or professionally. The employee is always going to go that step further when they know that they've got, you know, some support behind them.
Sure. No.
Jimmy, let me ask you, what types of kids, you know, are you're working within Kids Making It in your organization, and you know, how do you typically find you know, participants in your organization?
Well, they find us. You know, we when you said talking about what kind, I was thinking about it, listening to our conversation. 40% of our kids are girls, and I'll tell you, the girls turn out to be every bit as good, if not better, than the boys because they've, you know, got a little more of an attention span, a little more attention to detail. You know, one of those $1,000 makers in 3 weeks was a girl, Valerie, and she, you know, comes in every day, heads down, doing her work. But, you know, we work with, you know, how people find us. I mean, the parents recommend them, guidance counselors, kids come in off the street. They say, I want to get a job here like my friend has. And I said, well, it's not exactly a job, but But sure, so let's see. So we have an intake process, and not every kid qualifies, but most kids do. It's you know, kids who are at risk of juvenile delinquency or, you know, low-income families of various ways. But in any event, you know, it's not hard at all to become a Kids Making the Kid.
KidsMakingIt.org. That's KidsMakingIt.org is the website if you want to find out more information about this youth program here in the area. And on that note, as you mentioned, 40%, and we talk ad nauseum about our young boys and the lack of attention that has been paid to them over the last couple of decades. Now, there's anything wrong with having, you know, a good majority of young females in that program or you know, throughout our country doing great things, but the numbers show it. Boys have been falling behind for decades because there's been an effort to lift up you know, females in our society. And that's not to be sexist or make any type of controversial comment. The numbers and the research backs up those types of thoughts. And this is another effort here that we can appeal to young men that are falling behind, that there is a pathway and there are people that can support you and provide you an opportunity to make a really good living and support yourself and, you know, maybe your family down the road. All right, we're heading up into the top of the hour. Our friend Cameron Moore is with us with the Wilmington Cape Fear Home Builders Association. It's our twice a month Construction Connection segment here on the Big Talker 106.7 FM.
Island informed. The Big Talker 106.7 FM WFBT, Carolina Beach.
Breaking news this hour from townhall.com. I'm Rich Thomason. The February jobs report is just in, and it's a winner. Employers grew their payrolls by 379,000 jobs last month, according to the government. The rebound in hiring is an encouraging sign for the U.S. economy. The unemployment rate has fallen to 6.2%. As the Senate prepares to open debate on President Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID relief package, Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says Democrats trying to ram the bill through without any Republican input.
But Washington Democrats are trying to exploit the last chapters of this crisis to pass what President Biden's chief of staff calls, quote, the most progressive domestic legislation in a generation. And they've told Republicans, take it or leave it.
GOP Senator John Kennedy says a ton of money's already been allocated for pandemic relief, with a lot of it still unspent.
Spent a lot of money, about $4 trillion. That's 4,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,
and on into the weekend. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio brushing aside Governor Cuomo's criticism of the city's coronavirus response.
He's got three women who have brought forward allegations of inappropriate activity and sexual harassment. He has a nursing home scandal and a cover-up related to that scandal. He's trying to distract attention away from that.
Wall Street futures flying high in the aftermath of the latest jobs report. Right now, Dow futures up 235 points, NASDAQ futures 46 points higher, and the S&P futures up 29 points ahead of this morning's opening bell. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Tell me why Relief Factor is so successful in lowering or eliminating pain. I'm often asked that question. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father and son founders of Relief Factor, tell me they believe our bodies were designed to heal. The doctors who formulated Relief Factor selected the four best ingredients, 100% drug-free ingredients that each help your body deal with inflammation. Order the three-week quick start now. Discount it to only $19.95 to see if it will work for you too. Call 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com.
Dan owed an unbelievable amount of money to the IRS.
I got behind on my taxes. It's a horrible feeling.
Dan turned to Optima Tax Relief, the leading tax resolution firm who put his problems to rest.
They got the job done, and life is good.
Call Optima now for a free consultation.
Stop worrying. Make the call now.
Call 800-965-1433. 800-965-1433.
Optima Tax Relief.
For details, visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
Demonstrators in Myanmar, undeterred by violent attacks by security forces, have staged more anti-coup protests.
Hundreds of protesters who say they are tech workers and employees from banking and finance sectors march through the streets of Mandalay, despite the security presence in the city. The regular protests, which have become more deadly this week, come ahead of a special United Nations Security Council meeting to discuss the political crisis in the Southeast Asian nation. As well as for scores of killings, more than 1,000 people have been arrested, according to the Independent Assistance Association for Political Prisoners. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Greece will introduce an increase in military service for conscripts serving in the army from 9 to 12 months starting in May. Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. A second wave of almost 100 midshipmen from the U.S. Naval Academy going to move to a hotel because of a COVID-19 outbreak at the school.
The Capital Gazette reports nearly 200 students are now being housed at the Graduate Hotel in the Hilton Garden Inn in an effort to help the school in Annapolis, Maryland, to better handle an outbreak. Midshipmen have already been essentially confined to their dormitory rooms except for essential activity, and those staying at the hotels will take classes online and cannot have guests or food delivery. Rhonda Rockster reporting.
The reported threat to the U.S. Capitol still has police on edge. The acting chief of the U.S. Capitol Police appealing to congressional leaders to back her request to keep National Guard troops protecting the building and lawmakers for another 2 months. Watching Wall Street this morning, the Dow futures up 239 points, NASDAQ futures ahead 88, and the S&P futures up 37 points. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is gonna hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
All right, rounding out our final hour of the broadcast week on this Friday morning, our friends at the Wilmington Cape Fear Home Builders Association are with us twice a month. We talk growth development related to the construction industry in one of the fastest growing regions in the state and all across the nation, right here in southeastern North Carolina. Cameron Moore is the executive officer of the local home builders group, and he's with us this morning. And another great conversation about what the industry is doing to try and attract young people to the workforce and efforts that start at a very young age. And we've been building this conversation up, Cameron, over the last couple of appearances that you've made. And I think, you know, some valuable information getting put forward there that I hope, you know, is able to turn the tides just a little bit on the stigma, I guess, that home builders have, the construction industry as a whole has in, what's life like for people like yourselves as compared to, you know, those who have that master's degree or the college degree and, that pathway of you have to go to college to be successful. I think we're cracking into that just a bit as far as, you know, that mindset that many Americans have had for decades now, that you have to go to college to be successful in this country and in this world. And that's just not the case.
Right. And I want to touch on something there before we went to the break. Jimmy was kind of talking about the women in kids making it, and how much, you know, as far as a percentage to the male population there he has. That's actually a national standard, too. We were looking at this in 2019. We saw the number of women employed in the construction industry grow to right around 1.2 million nationally speaking. So it is actually ramped up, and this is coming from a kind of a pre-recession level, but we're seeing more women enter the construction field. But you mentioned the stigma and everything. I want kind of to touch on, you know, Jimmy's, his kids, so to speak. It's coming, the kids making and stuff. Kind of their overall, the diversity of the program. You know, it is an at-risk program for at-risk youth. But talk about the kids there. You know, when they come to you, sometimes the shape that they're in and kind of how you put a program together, it not only provides them a pathway, but also the life skills section of it. I think that's really key and important.
You know, in the nonprofit world, you have to write a lot of grants. And one of the phrases that I came up with in the first grant I ever wrote was that woodworking teaches the truth of actions and consequences. Because if you try to rush it up and cut the corner, you're not going to be successful. You have to do it all over again. Right. If you bend the nail over, you got to straighten it back up and pull it out and put another one in, you know? So we're trying to impart those basic truths of life through woodworking. And we're not, you know, we have a social worker, but we went through 70 applications to find a social worker that could teach woodworking and didn't want to sit behind the desk and put kids on the couch. So we succeed with those kids. We all do a fair amount of tailgate counseling over the years with kids, what I call that, just to be there working side by side with them. And so we try to really put together, you make the opportunities there for them, not give them a hand out, but give them a hand up. Everything they sell in our retail shop, money comes out of that check to pay for the materials. Mm-hmm. Not because we need the money or we want the money. We'd rather go all to them, but we want them to know there's a cost to that. So when they're selling a lot of cutting boards these days. When they sell a cutting board for $30 out of maple and cherry, they probably got $1.50 in wood in that. So we deduct $1.50. And that way they know. But, you know, I was just thinking about our kids. We have an example. We try to have this continuum of programs that offers opportunities to keep them involved and show them a path forward. We have a young man that started with us in the after-school program, became a great woodworker, went into the apprenticeship program, went through the summer jobs, was on our KMI crew for a couple of summers. When it was in the summer jobs program, and then wound up in the skilled trades program with Andy. And he's now on the framing crew, happy as he can be. But, you know, we just kept, you know, we rarely turn anyone away.
Right.
And if they mess up, we give them a chance to make it right, you know. So,
right. You'd mentioned you pay the kids. They get a paycheck.
They get a pay. Well, they call it a paycheck. It's really their profits on their sales. Sure. Yeah.
At what age can that? You touched on earlier. Was it 13?
13. Yeah.
13.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that real quick. So at 13 years old, you had a student. We're going to call them a student because mm-hmm. I think that's mm-hmm. essentially what they're. They're not a. Sure. They may be a kid when they come to your doorstep, but after a while, they're become a student.
Right.
Because you're serving a mentor role there, that made over $1,000.
Yeah, 3 weeks in 3 weeks worth of work.
Wow.
But it's the holidays. There's a lot of demand.
Right.
You know, we have somebody pushing that stuff out on Facebook and Instagram.
But they understand it. They see it coming and understand and see the value and the worth of what they're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wrote, like, I think over $7,000 worth of checks in early December for what the kids had made the previous 3 weeks. Yeah.
That's wild. Jimmy, let's talk about the new apprenticeship programs. Got a new building. We touched on it earlier in the show here. You know, you had a space.
Right.
You outgrew that space.
Yeah.
I've been in, and you do a lot of different things too. And kind of talking about the new space, but the current space. I mean, it's not just woodworking. I mean, you guys do 3D imagery. You do a lot of 3D engraving and stuff. You talk about the different awards that you've reached out to the community, but now you've branched out. PBC's come on board to build this nice, new, beautiful facility. Let's talk about the facility a little bit, some of the materials that were in that facility, because I know it's a beautiful spot. I've been into it. It's absolutely gorgeous. But then I'd like to jump to Kyle a little bit and talk about, you know, not only so much why they saw the need of coming on board, but build the building process of what it took to get that thing out of the ground and some of the different trials and tribulations of that. And then really jump into the apprenticeship role, what it is that we're talking about here. So talk a little bit about the materials that went into that building, the labor of love, so to speak, to get it built.
Well, it's an unusual building. I mean, we were, one of our friends from many years back suggested we build it as a timber frame building.
Right.
And when he talked to Pim Jenkins, who owns Turnbull Lumber, over in Elizabethtown, and said, if I design it, can you help us with the wood? And Pim said, we donate all the wood. And so it immediately changed from a cinder block building. Remember that, Kyle? We were going to do a split face block. It was cheap. Well, not cheap to us, but then this became the thing, and it was like, whoa, who knows how to build that? So, you know, Atlantic Barn and Timber here in Wilmington offered to put it together for us at no cost. And then Kyle, of course, you know, with Rob Romero, the architect, it's like, okay, how do we take a timber frame building? How do we put the regular framing with it? You know, and so all the regular stuff is there. You know, we have the slab, we have the windows, the doors, the walls, the HVAC. And it is really, and you know, it's really stunning. But Kyle, you know, talk more about that.
You know, I say you definitely have to give a shout out to Rob Romero, who took a timber frame building that you don't see around here very often. So I tell anyone that drives down Castle Street, just take a look around. It's definitely the only building like itself in all of Wilmington, for sure. But you give Rob Romero for taking credit for taking our ideas and turning them into a usable spaces. So the great thing about timber frame, and Jimmy was kind of held tight on it, was he didn't want a bunch of piers and pilings all over the place. He wanted one big open space. Mm-hmm. Well, timber frame allows you to do that. So you can put a piling on one side and a piling on the other, and then you have a, you know, I don't know, maybe a 30-foot span in between, a free space. So you can set up table saws, you can weld, you can, you know, set up a, build a shed inside your building and sell it to someone and make some profits for the company. Or for the nonprofit. So, I think Rob took our ideas and put them on paper, and what we ended up with was just something that you just don't see every day. It's modern, but it's a timber frame building.
So for our listeners, what is timber frame? Explain that a little bit, real quick.
So we started from the ground up, and we pour a concrete slab, and then Atlantic Timber came in, and they erected a building. So all of the vertical members of the building that hold the load coming from the roof and the floor system and everything gets put, all that pressure, all that weight gets put on the pilings. Mm-hmm. And then those pilings, they run horizontal too, and that holds the load of the walls. So, you know, conventional framing is 2x4s and 2x6s, and we're nailing it together. I believe that building is put together with very few actual mechanical, metal fasteners. It's held together with wooden dowels, and it's something fascinating to see and watching the guys work. It wasn't uncommon for them to take a knee brace up, which was just a brace to keep it from falling over sideways while they were building it, and bring a hand plane and a chisel with them up there to make sure that it fit just right. And then they finish that off by driving in a wooden dowel. So,
which is all basic carpentry skills.
Yeah, just basic. But our industry's left those far behind, really. Right. You know, so it's something rare. You don't see it very often. But what a fascinating thing to watch. And they put that whole building together. You look at it, and you would think it took a crane and 13 or 14 guys. And I believe it was 4 guys. Yeah. And as Dave says, 1 smart guy and a couple other guys, you could put anything together. And it really was. They knew what they were doing. They erected it right up, and didn't take long. It was interesting. Hmm.
So let's talk about, what's the building's use?
Well, its primary use, the second floor is going to be office space,
right,
and meeting space and classroom space. So now we're having our skilled trades classes, the sit-down classes, upstairs in the big open space. But the downstairs is all going to be workshop space. And so our model is going to be that we're going to take kids through maybe a 6-week rotation of each trade. We'll spend 6 weeks or so on construction carpentry, 6 weeks on electrical, 6 weeks on plumbing, 6 weeks on HVAC, 6 weeks on masonry, perhaps, and bring in contractors to help teach those classes, and then give kids a taste of all of it. So they won't come out as electricians, but they will have, you know, run some circuits, you know, made the light go on, worked with us, you know, a panel, you know, kids in plumbing. I mean, they'll be, you know, running pets and cutting pipe and, you know, plumbing the toilet and the faucet and so on. But they'll have a sense of what it's about. And then, you know, the time will come when they'll say, you know, I really like the HVAC. Mm-hmm. And we'll say, great. So at that point, we have a local family foundation that will pay for their tuition to go to Cape Fear. If they want to go to Cape Fear and study HVAC and get the certificate, we can help make that happen with our friends at this foundation. If they want to get out on the jobs, we can call Cameron Moore and say, who you got, Cameron?
And somebody I'm going to be calling Kyle and Dave.
right. Yeah. And so the jobs are there right now. So
as an industry, and we touched on it earlier, we've got to be on the backside of this. Yep. We have to be on the backside of this. We have to be willing to come in to help. We have to be also on the backside as far as when the student gets out of this, so to speak, if they don't want to go to Cape Fear, if they want to go straight to work, we as an industry need to be ready for that. How old is this student?
Which student?
Running through the apprenticeship program. How
old? We're calling the skilled trades. The apprenticeship is our...
Gotcha.
Our
okay,
pay
gotcha.
Positions, but just different. But we can do it, and we're now starting with our older teenagers right now, just because of the pandemic, and we're trying to kind of keep it close and small to begin with. But these are kids from like 16, 17 and up. But I have a list of kids that were kids making it years ago. One of them is 35 years old, who says, when you're rolling, I want to come. So we'll be serving, you know, people, you know, young adults too.
Okay. Do you have all the skilled trades programs set to go? Can they run today?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Okay.
You know, one thing that I think Jimmy doesn't take enough credit for, and we were just talking about it at break, is every time I go there to walk through, there's always kids sitting around doing their homework.
Right.
And that doesn't seem like a real big thing, but Jimmy's given these younger students a place to come. Sit down, do their homework in the break room, whatever. If they had a question, they ask, and then they go and do their activities. And I believe that just that little bit that Jimmy doesn't even really want to take credit for, just that little bit of place to give them, to give that student that might be going home to a situation that's not as easy to do their homework in, to give them that place to do that is such a huge help. Our industry has attracted all types of people, but we need to attract more A and B students. And just having that opportunity to realize that your schoolwork is important as well. Mm-hmm. You're coming out an A and B student, and you understand mathematics. You understand different things that maybe the kids that didn't sit down and really take their time doing their homework understand. So I think it's really great that Jimmy allows these students to come in and do that in his shop.
I mean, I would agree. I mean, it's the character building of it. It's making sure that they've got the grades to excel. And we've talked about that life skill and also that career pathway. It's kind of really the dual role of what you're providing there. So, Jim, we'll turn it back over to you a little bit, but we've touched on a lot of different things, this morning. I think the pathway aspect, you know, we touched on it with C-Tech. Jimmy mentioned here kind of the latter section of this pathway, kind of the Cape Fear, and then from there getting out into the career world. Kyle touched on it as far as age, level, we need to be as an industry all the way down, moving up and down the ladder of this pathway. We need to be as an association, and we're doing what we can do to get back into the elementary schools, back into the middle schools. And Jimmy, you're always welcome to come along with me. Kyle knows he is as well.
Yeah.
And he's done more than I have as far as getting out in these schools. But you're always welcome to come, because I think your story of how it's different, but it's also, it aligns with what we're trying to do here. But, you know, we had a great talk last episode about the pathway. This is just one section of that pathway as kids move up and down the ladder, so to speak.
I mean, we know that there is a massive need. There's no, you know, ifs, ands, or buts about that. Interesting to see how we're addressing it here in southeastern North Carolina. And I'm going to do a little research in the next couple of weeks to see if there's anything like this going on elsewhere, you know, around our state or around the country, because this could be a model, you know, moving forward and partnering up with, you know, folks like yourself in the industry and to showcase, you know, what we're doing to try and bridge that gap and turn the, you know, some of the mindsets around as far as, you know, what the industry is about and who you are and why you do what you do, and that we can guide, you know, our young people into this industry, and it could be a very fruitful way of life for yourself, and it could change, you know, your family tree in many instances. As you know, Jimmy works with the Kids Making It program with a lot of, as he said, you know, kids who may be a little disadvantaged or, you know, socially out of the loop, that they're able to, you know, put yourself some time in. 5-10 years later, next thing you know, their new up and coming generation could, you know, have new opportunities that they never thought could be possible through, you know, organizations like Kids Making It, woodworking program, located on Castle Street here in Wilmington. You can find out more about what they do. You can get involved. You can learn more about their after-school program, their apprenticeship program, along with the skilled trades that they teach at kidsmakingit.org. That's kidsmakingit.org, or call them at 910-763-6001. Cameron, you got anything else this morning?
No, I don't think so. Jimmy, anything? No,
we're good, thanks.
So?
You know, just one thing I wanted to wrap up is, you know, we're talking about females in the industry, mm-hmm. and I was sitting down to dinner the other night with my wife, who works with us also, and she looked at me and she said, "Do you realize that 45% of your company is female?" And for a construction business, that's not very typical, and it was never intentional. I think one thing our company has always tried to do is just hire the best people, and it never really cared about what they looked like or what they did prior to what they're going to do for us. But anyway, I just think that, you know, we need more of those attitudes out there, that we just hire the best people and we don't really care about sex, race, anything else. It's just bring them on.
And we got to pay them.
Yep, we got to pay them well.
Yep. Good point. Very good point.
Cameron, good stuff today. Thanks
Thank
a
you,
lot.
Jay. Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
That's our latest edition of the Construction Connection segment, wrapping up here on the Big Talker FM. We're 25 minutes past the hour. Again, each every second Friday here and the last Friday of the month, Cameron joins us with the Wilmington Cape Fear Home Builders Association as we talk growth, development, and the construction industry here across the Cape Fear region. Good stuff today from the executive officer of the local home builders group here in town. We'll pick things up after the timeout.